Iran reacts to Washington's expression of concern about Tehran-Beijing ties. It says the flourishing of strategic cooperation in the East is accelerating the U.S. decline. The World Health Organization is warning about the consequences of the inequitable distribution of COVID vaccines around the world. The Suez Canal Authority says that a huge container ship blocking the busy waterway for almost a week has been partially refloated. Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behzad Shafiq. Good to have you with us. The U.S. president has expressed concern about the newly signed Iran-China Comprehensive Partnership Pact.
How concerning is the emerging partnership between China and Iran?
I've been concerned about that for a year.
Now, Biden made a comment addressing reporters in the U.S. city of Wilmington. Tehran and Beijing signed a cooperation pact called Sino-Iranian Strategic Partnership. It was signed during a visit by the Chinese foreign minister to Iran. The agreement includes cooperation in political, strategic, and economic fields. Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council has reacted to Biden's comments. Ali Shamkhani says that Biden's concern is correct, as the flourishing of strategic cooperation in the East accelerates the U.S. decline. I talked to right-wing political commentator John White, and he says that President Joe Biden's concern about the Iran-China deal because it goes against Washington's anti-Tehran sanctions and pressure.
When Biden says he's been concerned about this growing relationship between Iran and China for some time, let's be clear what he's concerned about. He's concerned about Iranian children having food on the table, and he would rather they did not have food on the table, because this, when all is taken into context, is what this is really about. The Iranian people have been suffering the depredations of U.S. Caesar sanctions, as have the Venezuelan people, as have the Cuban people for over half a century, and as are the Syrian people as we speak. And Anthony Blinken and Joe Biden have succeeded within 100 days of their administration being in office of poisoning relations between the US and Russia to an all-time low, which is really saying something, and poisoning relations between Washington and Beijing to an all-time low, which is really saying something, though for different reasons than his predecessor, Donald J. Trump. So when it comes to human rights, the US has no leg to stand on. Indeed, a million Iraqi dead, thousands of Libyan dead, the people who are suffering the depredations of the sanctions I just described in Iran and Venezuela and Cuba, they make clear that the U.S. has no right to lecture any country on human rights at any time, anywhere.
The U.S. Secretary of State has threatened Russia with consequences of what he calls Moscow's malign activities against Washington. Antony Blinken says that the U.S. will take steps to defend its interests whenever it chooses to. He highlighted a shared commitment among U.S. and its Western allies to hold Russia accountable for its actions. Washington has refused to participate in virtual talks with Moscow to discuss the tensions after President Biden called his Russian counterpart a killer. The U.S. accuses Russia of cyber attacks and of meddling in the November presidential vote that Joe Biden won. Moscow has dismissed the allegations. Ties between the two have been tense, with several tit-for-tat actions taken against one another. Political analyst Greg Simon says that the U.S. is a declining power that has a hard time supporting its NATO allies in light of its tensions with Moscow.
Because they've made it clear that unreliable partner, they make assertions and assumptions, grandstanding, but there is nothing substantive. They can't even support their allies. So they're threatening Germany with sanctions if they go ahead with supporting Nord Stream 2. They're not reliable for anyone at this stage because they're in decline. They understand it and they're doing everything. It's like someone who's drowning. They will pull anyone or anything down with them.
The World Health Organization has warned against a widening gap in the COVID vaccine distribution across the globe. WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says there is a growing gap between jabs distributed in rich countries and poor countries through the COVAX initiative. He denounced the unfair distribution of vaccines, saying it's economically and epidemiologically self-defeating. Now, that follows the criticism by UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres of the developed countries for creating a stockpile of COVID-19 vaccines. Guterres says that the COVAX international system of vaccine aid to the disadvantaged countries is having difficulties because there's been a lot of hoarding. Figures indicate more than half of the COVID-19 vaccines have been administered in high-income countries, which account for only 16% of the global population. A nighttime curfew has been imposed in the Gaza Strip as coronavirus infections continue to rise there. Earlier this month, the blockaded enclave witnessed a second wave of the pandemic. Human rights groups have repeatedly warned of the catastrophic implications of the killer virus in the Gaza Strip. Ashraf Shannon has more.
Local authorities in the blockaded Gaza Strip have imposed a nighttime lockdown as of Saturday to help combat the spread of coronavirus. Security forces are currently enforcing a curfew from 9 p.m. until 6 a.m. In recent days, the number of infections has risen to an alarming level. The impoverished enclave's fragile health system suffers from acute shortages of medicines and hospital supplies due to the illegal Israeli blockade. Hospitals in Gaza currently have less than 200 ICU beds and ventilators for nearly 2 million inhabitants.
Infections are rising by hundreds on a daily basis, and this is very alarming. We call on all people to adhere to preventive measures, especially wearing masks and social distancing.
Due to the Israeli blockade, Gazans are under terrible strain, and their worries over the coronavirus have been heavily compounded. Gazans are already struggling to make ends meet amid the punishing Israeli blockade.
Authorities have imposed a new lockdown to stop the spread of the virus, but the economy will suffer further. We are under blockade and most people are poor. If the lockdown is extended, day laborers like me will suffer more.
In late August 2020, a full lockdown was imposed on the Gaza Strip for a period of 2 weeks after authorities confirmed the first coronavirus cases spread through the community.
We are planning to impose further restrictions in the coming days to break the cycle of infection and protect the people in Gaza. The situation is very dangerous, and we expect a new spike in infections in the coming days. We will work hard with all institutions to flatten the curve of infection.
The ongoing Israeli blockade imposed on Gaza is one of the main reasons why tackling the deadly coronavirus pandemic is particularly difficult.
People here are bracing themselves for the worst as coronavirus infections continue to increase. Experts have warned that a wider outbreak of the pandemic could be catastrophic. Ashraf Shannon, Gaza.
The Egyptian president has announced the success of an operation to unwedge a giant container ship stuck in the Suez Canal for nearly a week. Abdel Fattah al-Sisi says that the ship, called Ever Green, was unwedged despite the enormous complexity surrounding the process. The vessel became jammed diagonally across a sudden section of the canal in high winds early last Tuesday. Some 370 vessels were waiting to transit the canal on either side of the blocked area. The incident has created disruptions in the global shipping industry, as around 30% of the world's shipping container volume moves through the Suez Canal daily. Two military convoys belonging to U.S.-led forces have reportedly come under attack in central and southern Iraq. According to local media, one supply convoy was targeted in Babylon province, another one was hit in Qadisiyah. No immediate report of possible casualties or damage. Attacks have increased against U.S. forces and their supply convoys in Iraq in the past months. Tensions escalated after a U.S. Strike near Baghdad killed top Iranian General Soleimani and Iraqi Commander al-Mohandes in 2020. The Iraqi parliament has already passed a resolution urging the government to end the presence of American forces on Iraqi soil. Now, the Iraqi parliament requested the U.S. troops in Iraq be withdrawn over a year ago. An Iraqi lawmaker now saying that the legislature will take new measures if talks with the U.S. planned for April do not lead to a pullout. We have discussed that issue in our news review program.
Our news review segment, where we take a look at one of our stories in more detail. Now, an Iraqi lawmaker says Parliament will take a new position if upcoming talks with the US do not lead to the withdrawal of American forces from the country. Katib al-Rikabi is a member of the Iraqi Parliament Security and Defense Committee. He said there has been no firm statement from US officials on the withdrawal of American forces since the Iraqi Parliament called for the pullout. He said that is concerning. Iraqi lawmakers voted for the pullout of American forces in January 2020. That came after a U.S. drone strike near Baghdad killed top Iranian General Qasem Soleimani and senior Iraqi commander Abu Mehdi al-Mohandes. Iraqis have held protests on various occasions against the presence of U.S. forces in their country. Joining us is David Yerubian, a professor of history, and we also have Romero Funes, a political commentator. Gentlemen, welcome. David, you know the U.S. argument for its military presence in Iraq is to train the local Iraqi army. But the last time against Daesh, the last time Daesh came to town, the U.S. trained Iraqi army did a fabulous job. They all fled. You know, you had the commanders fled, ghost soldiers, if you recall, leaving foot soldiers to the slaughterhouses. Enter Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and his small team of military advisors who taught Iraqi military commanders something about bravery on the battlefield. So I'm guessing my question is, and that's something that allowed Daesh to collapse in such a short time. So why not bring back the professionals? Of course, America assassinated Iran's war hero, General Qasem Soleimani, but there are others. Should Iraq need assistance, it could ask its neighbor for professional advice, not a country some 11,000, I think, kilometers away.
I believe that the purpose of the maintenance of U.S. troops in Iraq is not to provide for Iraqi security, either in the short or the long term, and specifically against the forces of ISIS, which the United States, through its invasion and occupation of Iraq, and as well the setting up of the military that you mentioned, and essentially the staging of material for the Takfiri terrorists of ISIS to pick up in their assault on both the people and governments of Syria as well as Iraq. This is part of the plan to maintain U.S. forces in Iraq as long as possible, to continue the destabilization of Syria, to continue its presence in Iraq, as President Trump pretty frankly said, to watch Iran, as he stated. And so this is a part of the plan. The training of what, as you described, was an ineffective Iraqi military that therefore necessitated the return of U.S. forces in 2014 to take care of the Takfiri mess that they had created. And we know this through the DIA documents from 2012, from the statements of John Kerry, from the Hillary Clinton and John Podesta emails. And so to the direct topic of the upcoming strategic talks between the United States and the Iraqi government, I think it's imperative that the United States sets out a very clear and brief timetable for the withdrawal of its forces, so that ultimately Iraqi and optimally Syrian security can finally be obtained.
Romero, some resistance leaders in the country say even passing the Iraqi Parliament passed a bill to essentially calling for the U.S. to withdraw, they say even that was a mistake, because it's clearly written in Iraq's constitution that an occupation is prohibited. And now some say, well, it's not an occupation. How is it not an occupation when you have combat troops on the ground, you've got warplanes using Iraqi airspace without consent from Baghdad, killing Iraqi security forces on Iraqi soil without facing the country's judicial system. The list is endless.
That's exactly right. I think we have to frame this as what it is, which is an occupation, an imperialist occupation by the United States. We have Anthony Blinken, who is the Secretary of State under the Joe Biden administration, who comes from a long line of war hawks, of people who believe that the United States has a role to police the globe, to make sure that countries fall under their domination. In this case, their role is a little different. I think the Biden administration, the Democrats, they maintain the same policies as the Republicans of invasion, of occupation. However, they do it under the name of human rights. They do it under the name of advancing humanity, which we know is a complete lie. Anywhere the United States has stepped foot has only gotten worse, Iraq being a great example of that after 2003. We're talking about one of the oldest and most beautiful civilizations in human history, Iraq, where the birthplace of Babylon, of Ur, of so many ancient beautiful civilizations, and has such a wealth of resources, and is also geopolitically located in a very key area. The U.S. does not want to uplift Iraq. The U.S. does not want to empower Iraq. The U.S. wants to maintain Iraq under perpetual occupation, because if we take a look at a map of Iraq, where is it located? It's located right between Iran and Syria, right between what connects East Asia and South Asia with the Mediterranean. Now, for the U.S., for Israel, for Saudi Arabia, in any way, if Iraq joins and develops with Iran, which it was trying to do, that's what the Iraqi people want. They want to grow. They want to prosper. They want to build hospitals. They want to connect the One Belt, One Road initiative. They want to trade with Syria and Iran. Now, if Iraq does that, that is a very big threat to Israel. That is a very big threat to the United States, to Saudi Arabia, who have investments to make sure that Iraq remains perpetually destroyed, perpetually occupied. It's the missing link in the axis of resistance to imperialism in the region. And I think that, unfortunately, the U.S. will do whatever it can to make sure it maintains that occupation.
Okay, gentlemen, good discussion. Let's thank our guests for their time, David Rubiana, Professor of History, and we also had Romero Funes, political commentator. That brings an end to this edition of the News Review.
Welcome back. Moving on, in France and in 20 other European countries, marches have been held to demand decent housing for homeless people. The housing problem has affected many people and it has worsened with the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, despite a new president and the arrival of spring, economic data from the U.S. continues to be sharply negative. New data shows that there has still been no economic recovery, causing President Biden's approval rating to drop 6 points in a matter of weeks. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Congratulations to everyone on the 15th of Shaban, the birthday anniversary of the Imam of the Age, Abu Saleh al-Mahdi. May God hasten his reappearance.
Gentlemen, this is John. Welcome back to another episode of The Subcontinent. Our program aims to address important issues in the subcontinent which affect the governments, people, organizations, and the region of South Asia as a whole. We will try to explain the issues, break down controversies surrounding them, and try to have some external perspectives from experts and people. Please stay with us.
In this edition of The Subcontinent, we are going to talk about the Persian New Year, or Nowruz, and the various forms it is celebrated across the subcontinent. And we shall discuss the ancient Iranian festival as a platform for closer cooperation and interaction throughout the globe.
Since the beginning of humanity, people from all throughout the globe have had some form of spring fest to celebrate the reappearance of life. For many civilizations, it is called Nowruz. Nowruz, which literally means new day in Persian, has traveled to all corners of the planet and put on different costumes and traits, blended with different cultures and communities through history. Today, Nowruz has shared a story narrated with myriad of nuances by all those who know it.
Nowruz marks the start of spring and is a celebration of nature and environment. But it has survived history and passed across geography because it means so much more than a mere seasonal festival. It is a fantastic collection of traditions and a system of values shared by many civilizations across the globe.
The celebration of Nowruz is basically the celebration of nature. And the changes we have with the change of the season, we see that in the basically traditional philosophical traditions, people do believe that their life, their beliefs are influenced by the natural surroundings, and there are many such thinkings.
Nowruz has changed and is still changing like a living and dynamic organism, but its core human values has remained through old traditions for more than 3,000 years. Spreading messages like hope, revival and diversity all over the world, Nowruz is celebrated almost everywhere, from Balkans to the Black Sea Basin, from the Caucasus to Central Asia, from the Middle East all through the subcontinent to the shores of the Pacific Ocean.
All these countries, particularly in Asia, they celebrate Nowruz, but there are local elements. Nowruz is celebrated in India, in different parts of India, but we have also similar celebration like Nowruz. We have Holi, we have Basant, and they have a different whole cultural background and its epistemology. But even the Nowruz that is celebrated in India has Indian and local elements.
According to the United Nations, today Nowruz festivities are held by over 300 million people in Iran, Kosovo, Georgia, Tajikistan, Albania, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Azerbaijan, Turkmenistan, Afghanistan, and parts of India and Pakistan. The Kurdish populations of Turkey, Iraq, and Syria, as well as the Turkic community in western China, also celebrate the ancient Iranian fest.
The United Nations family celebrates Nowruz because this holiday has meaning for the whole world. Nowruz is a reminder of all that we have in common and the richness of our diversity.
Nowruz, like many other remnants of our mythological past, is a variegated palette of symbols and concepts that were created to remind us ideas like commonalities of life and death, the re-emergence of hope, and unity alongside diversity. Well, anyone who has ever lived or even visited, for example, India or Pakistan, knows well that the subcontinent is all about unity alongside diversity.
Nowruz is celebrated on the day of the astronomical vernal equinox. In stories, it marks the victory of King Jamshid against a killer mythological winter, but the reality is simpler. It marks the spring equinox, that is the moment the sun crosses the celestial equator and equalizes night and day. It may be one of the early things humans noticed about the cycle of life on their planet. solstices and equinoxes are easily observable astronomical patterns. For the pastoralists of ancient Asian steppes, it was only an indicator of changing seasons. The spring equinox may have not enjoyed the significance and ritual connotations in the early days. However, Nowruz rose to prominence over time only after the first Indo-Europeans became settled farmers, when they began to use the spring celebration as the start of the planting seasons for sowing and harvesting crops. There is consensus among linguists and scholars that the word is a later name for the festival. The older name for the holiday was Navosardo, which meant New Year.
Nowruz is a day of celebrating life. On this day, people welcome the coming of spring, which symbolizes life. We believe that the warmth of life returns to land during this season.
The United Nations has officially announced Nowruz as an international holiday. According to the official UN document, it promotes values of peace and solidarity between generations and within families, as well as reconciliation and neighborliness, contributing to the cultural diversity and friendship among peoples and different communities. Nowruz plays a significant role in strengthening the cordial relations among peoples based on mutual respect and the ideals of peace and good neighborliness.
Nowruz is not a mere holiday. It is comprised of a set of ideas. If you focus on its deep human fundamentals, Nowruz may be able to go beyond a traditional festival. It may work as uniting force between the East and the West.
I have my very beautiful experience in Iran celebrating Nowruz. And Iran, as we see as our second home, once I was there around 5 years ago on the occasion of Nowruz, I visited my friend's home, and it was very pleasant to see the elders giving Eid to youngers, and I too received the similar gift from the elders. And there was all celebration, people coming to see each other, having food, and celebrating, and it was a great moment and a great time.
Nowruz was developed by Zoroastrians, but spread across the subcontinent mostly by Muslims. While in northern India, this festival's inception dates back to the Mughal era in western India. The festivity was brought by the Parsi community. It is among the rare occasions when arch rivals Pakistan and India congratulate each other. There is a shared positive sense about it.
The festival of Nowruz has a special significance in Kashmir. It's celebrated here with great fervor. Nowruz celebrations here date back to pre-Islamic times, but after the arrival of Islamic scholars from Persia who introduced Islam here, the festival gained importance and has become an integral part of our rich cultural heritage.
Such an aspect can potentially create a platform for more positive interactions among different nations and governments. It may come to serve as a friendly vessel for better communication between New Delhi and Islamabad.
Well, we can say that Nowruz is a kind of soft power we have in this region to connect the people of the whole region. If we say about India and Indian subcontinent, basically the region of celebrations, because we have different cultural identities, hundreds of the cultural identities, and they have their own festivities, beliefs, and cultural traditions. Nowruz was adopted and welcomed because it coincides with many of Indian celebrations. As I mentioned, Basant being celebrated in January, and Holi is being celebrated sometime in February or in early March. And similarly, we have other festivities. And we have Zoroastrians here, the migrants, they are called as Parsis. They do celebrate it, Nowruz. Vis-a-vis, they also have their own Shahanshahi calendar that comes in August, yet they do celebrate in Nowruz on the same time, celebrated everywhere. And we see the variations also. And there are also people in Bangladesh, in Dhaka, the Nawab family of Dhaka, in Hyderabad, in Gujarat, in Bombay, the Parsi people, even in Delhi. And for the whole Turkish period in India, that was for around 800 years, they had celebrated it. It was introduced in 13th century by Balban, who basically copied it from the Iranian tradition, and he himself tried to imposter himself being the descendant of Iranian great kings of Shahnama. So there has been a great tradition, and there is assimilation of the local elements.
The subcontinent has numerous regional and religious events survive throughout the various parts of history or mythology. For instance, Pongal is a multi-day Tamil harvest festival in South India, and Holi is the popular Hindu festival of spring. But for many, Nowruz has been added to the calendar because it covers them all. The multi-week cultural festival is a compact combination of feasts and fetes that in other parts of the world are presented in dozens of holidays and occasions scattered all along the year.
Nowruz is celebrated globally as the symbol of life and peace, but people in many of the countries that celebrate Nowruz are suffering from extreme distresses of war. During war and peace, famine and plague, and even now with this horrible pandemic, people tend to find the moment to notice and admire the return of spring. Applied in proper channels, Nowruz may be helpful in more political aspects. Imagine weeks of spring holidays for all those undergoing some sort of struggles, skirmishes, or other conflicts. In almost all cultures and countries over the planet, sprouted seeds, like wheat and barley, play a central role in the ritual surrounding the return of life and end of darkness. With a cooperative spirit, Nowruz can bring light to the life of many of those who are longing for a blossom of hope.
You're listening to The Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Listen to The Subcontinent every Monday here on IRIB English Radio.
Now, to have more insight and analysis, we are joined by Professor Syed Ainul Hassan. He's the Dean of School of Language, Literature and Cultural Studies at Jawaharlal Nehru University. Professor Hassan, welcome to the show. So, how can Nowruz play a role in uniting the people? Can it serve as a framework for better interaction among countries?
First of all, I would like to extend my best wishes to all sisters and brothers who celebrate Nowruz. As a matter of fact, Nowruz symbolizes a particular historical event. But that event is not just confined to one section of society or one sect of people. Rather, the message is too big and too vast. And you know, it was Jamshid who defeated devils, and people from all walks of life, from all over the world, went to congratulate him. They presented gifts to Jamshid. On what basis? Basically, it was victory of good over evil, and therefore, the world community, even today, is searching for some peace plan. And that peace plan can come after the defeat of evildoers. Those who have the best script and best spirit, good spirit, for them, you see, it's all right. But those who do not possess this, I mean, they should be defeated. This is the purpose of the entire world. And therefore, this is very much relevant today, that this message can only combine the entire community of the world together.
All right, so what subcontinental feats of culture or tradition have been added to Nowruz in India and Pakistan?
Well, this is somewhat a highly political matter. And instead of, you see, making any remark on this particular issue, I'm purely a person, you see, involved in academics. I see everything through academics. But well, India has been trying very hard to acknowledge the relevance of other people, other stakeholders. And therefore, no country is left out. You know, our Prime Minister visited a large number of countries. And instead of having any kind of grudge, rather, it was very, very peaceful and peace-inviting visits. And therefore, I believe that Indian government will definitely move forward again and again in this direction.
All right, Mr. Hassan, before moving ahead, let's just please take a quick look at how the global media has covered Nowruz, and then we can continue.
Nowruz traces its origins in the Iranian and Indian tradition of celebrating the season of regeneration. The origin of Nowruz celebrations has been mentioned in various historical accounts all over the world, but mostly in Muslim countries, both in Shia and Sunni communities. Most popularly celebrated in Maharashtra and Gujarat, the Persian New Year is known as Nowruz or Pateti and marks the beginning of the Iranian calendar. The holy occasion of the Iranian New Year's Day is commemorated around the world by celebrating with the spirit of love, peace, positivity, and prayer. Nowruz celebrations are sometimes known as Nowruz Jamshidi. According to the myth, Jamshid was carried through the air in a chariot, a feat that so amazed his subjects that they established a festival on that day. Similar mythological narratives exist in Indian and Turkish traditions, while the legend of Amu Nowruz is popular in the countries of Central Asia. In the 18th century, a rich tradesman from Surat, Nasir Vanji Kuhyaji, who often traveled to Iran, came to know about Nowruz and began celebrating the day back home that brought the festival to India. In the 19th century, another Parsi, Murwanji Pandey, started celebrating the day in Mumbai after his wife, who was from Iran, told him about it.
All right, Professor, welcome back. So, people from different races, ethnicities, and religions celebrate Nowruz or some kind of festival for spring. What is so innate within humans that they feel joyful or elated with the change of season?
That's a very, very, you know, important question today. What is happening in all Indian festivals are based on change of season. And in Iran also, it is the 21st March or Awwal-e Farvard, means change of season from one set to another. But let me tell you, most important thing is that, you know, it happened, you know, during the ancient time. And people migrated to India, like, you know, Parsis. Some people say in 7th century and some say that later centuries. But what they did, they preserved their ancient culture. They brought their ancient culture with them to India. And similarly, during Balban's time, there were a large number of Persians present in at the court of Balban, the Delhi Sultan. And therefore, Balban also started this festival. What? it has, you know, basically a cultural root. And therefore, Balwan wanted to combine all people together for this festivity. But later on, see, as people mentioned, and the historians also have mentioned, that it was Aurangzeb who somehow became more, you know, rigid and in terms of religious activities, and therefore he disbanded Nauruz. But today, you know, people in different states of India and outside India also, there are as many as I've learned that more than 40 countries celebrate Nauruz. So you can see the message of Nauruz and the importance of Nauruz. It is, if we confine it to the change of season only, then you see, it becomes, you see, like, you know, in Europe and America, there is a different season. And today, here you see in India, in Iran and other places, you see, what I say, the message is so strong, combining all people together. But yes, there is a community, like, you know, Shia community, believes that 21st, what is the relevance of 21st March? They believe that this was the day when Prophet Muhammad announced the name of his successor, which, you know, which is, say, pointed towards, you know, Ghadir Khum and what happened there. So this also becomes a relevance that, look, I mean, there is a change of seat, change of power from one to another. And very amicably, you see, there is a change of power. This is how, you see, you can find so many relevance, not one single. It's the first day of new calendar. This is also a relevance. In India, there is Holi, which is, you know, which will follow immediately after Nauruz. You will find Holi celebration where people throw colors on each other to friends and foes, distribute sweets, exchange flowers. And this is the time when best flowers are seen, whether in Iran or India. So therefore, change of season on one hand, but other relevance is also there, that people believe that, look, I mean, this is the day when we should meet each other, we should greet each other, we should celebrate together.
So, Professor, can Nauruz be used as a way for friendlier communications between India and Pakistan?
Well, Nauruz, you see, there is nobody who can deny the role of festivals in, you know, combining communities together. And as I said, India has been a peaceful and peace-loving country. And India always invites people to participate in festivities. Like, you know, who says that Holi is different from Nauruz? Holi gives similar message, where, you know, we find victory of good over evil. That's a message of Holi festival, where, you know, the bad thing is thrown to the dust. Then they lit fire. And they cross, they go across the fire. You see, in Iran, they say Surkhi wa Zardi. Here also, they say that, look, I am for good. And let the bad spirit go to the hell. So this is a message. If, you know, if Pakistan is accepting it, or in Central Asia it is prevalent, I think, well, one should make effort in order to combine the entire community of the world together, and Pakistan is not, you know, away from the world community. I mean, Pakistan, and if Pakistan is extending hands in terms of, you see, Indian festivals, if they say they want to celebrate, India will not stop them. See, India will encourage them.
All right, now that was our special episode about Nauruz and its potential as a vessel of peace and symbol of life. We shall meet next week, and Nauruz Mubarak.
وَقَضَى رَبُّكَ أَلَّا تَعْبُدُوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
The first type of right that Imam Sajjad alayhi salam speaks about in his treatise is the right of God, the right of Allah, Haqqullah.
For Humanity, a commentary on Risalatul Huquq of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam. By Sayyid Wahid Alawi. An Islamic scholar with 16 years of Hawza studies.
In the name of the one who loves us more than we love him. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And welcome, dear brothers and sisters, to the program For Humanity on IRIB English Radio. We were talking about one of the rights in the Treatise of Rights from Imam Ali Zainul Abidin, the right of him whose advice you seek, where Imam Ali alayhi salam, Imam Ali Zainul Abidin alayhi salam states, it is quite natural that opinions are divergent and people have various views about their affairs in which they disagree. You are free not to accept his advice if you doubt it. However, you are not permitted to accuse him of providing you with ill advice as long as you consider him to be of those worthy of consultation. And here Imam Ali Zainul Abidin is referring to suspicion. Do not be suspicious towards your brothers and sisters when they give you an advice, an honest advice. And that's why in previous programs we have been talking about suspicion and the psychological diseases of it, the bad effects on the society from suspicion. And lastly, we were talking about the people whom you shouldn't seek advice from. And we said that number one, you should not seek advice from those who lie. Number two, those who are cowards. Number three, the ones who have greed. Number four, those who are cheap and stingy. And we reached number five, those who have negative moral traits, those who are indulged and absorbed in lust and sin. Because these people who are inflicted and imprisoned by their lust cannot give you opinions and advice outside their lust-attached views. They are imprisoned, basically, in their views. And that's why you should really, really focus on whom you are seeking advice from. And by that, we'll continue to the duties of the advisor, the one who gives advice. What are the duties of the person who wants to give advice? Number one, make sure that the one who seeks your advice also goes to others for advice, and that you are not the only one which he listens to. Why is that so? Because if you make any mistakes in your advice, it will all be on you. All the blame will be on you. You have to bear the responsibility. And likewise, if you're correct in your advice, all the good rewards will be yours. But by dividing all of the faults and rewards among the advisors, it will be easier to carry the mental burden for each one of them. Number two, try to give experienced and deep advices with a lot of thinking behind it. Don't just spit out something, don't just say something, but think deeply about what you are saying to the person. And we will continue, inshallah, with number 3 after the break. So please join us afterwards.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to the program For Humanity. We're talking about the right of him whose advice you seek, where Imam Ali Zainul Abidin alayhi salam says, وَأَمَّ حَقُّ الْمُشِيرِ إِلَيْكَ فَلَا تَتَّهِمْهُ بِمَا يُوقِفُكَ عَلَيْهِ مِنْ رَأْيِهِ إِذَا أَشَارَ عَلَيْكَ فَإِنَّمَا هِيَ الْأَرَاءُ وَتَصَرُّفُ النَّاسِ فِيهَا واختلافهم فكن عليه في رأيه بالخيار إذا اتهمت رأيه. And the right of him whose advice you seek is that you should not accuse him when he gives you advice which does not conform to your opinion. It is quite natural that opinions are divergent and people have various views about their affairs in which they disagree. You are free not to accept his advice if you doubt it. However, you are not permitted to accuse him of providing you with ill advice as long as you consider him to be of those worthy of consultation. And because of that, we were talking about suspicion. And we reached the part where we talked about the people who you shouldn't seek advice from. And then afterwards we reached the part where we talked about the duties of the advisor, the one who gives advice. And we reached number 3. If someone asks you for an advice, don't just give it without some deep thinking before it. Think deeply about it, have experience, and give him a thoughtful advice. Number 4. Don't give advice to people who won't listen and practice what you have to say. They are energy suckers. They suck out all your energy, and you shouldn't waste your energy for these kind of people. You will have spent your energy on something fruitless. So please consider the people, the person that you want to give advice to. Is that person X a person that will listen to you, that will practice what you are saying, that would a person who would walk the talk, or no, he would just suck your energy from you? That's very important. Number 5, never ever compromise the truth for the person's feelings or emotional state. Always say the truth, even in a lenient way, and even if it may be sour, as the Prophet said, say the truth even if it is sour. If you compromise the truth, dear brothers and sisters, towards the one who seeks your advice, it will be considered as treason. Oppression towards the one seeking advice is oppression and treason, says the Hadith. The conclusion of our topic of the right of him who seeks advice from you is that if you want to live a successful life, you should seek advice and also give advice. That's all for today, dear brothers and sisters. You can forward your questions to us through our email address, which is englishradio@irib.ir. And you can also listen to us through parstoday.com. Till next time, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon all of you. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Salli ya Rabbi ala Taha al-Amin, rahmatin arsaltahu lil'alamin, wa ala alin nabihi ajma'in, fabihim narjuka ahsin khatmina.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is